Good evening.
Good evening.
What do you suppose is the most destructive sin of our current era? Would you believe it if I said that it was likely one of the following: lust of the flesh, lust of the eyes, or pride of life? You would likely not only believe me, but you would probably agree with me wholly that the most destructive sins of our current era fit into one of those categories. I've given this some thought, and from my observation of the actions of this current generation, I believe the tongue is what gets us into the most amount of trouble. Look at Proverbs chapter 6, verses 16 through 19. Proverbs chapter 6, verses 16 through 19, a very familiar passage. "These six things doth the Lord hate, yea, seven are an abomination unto him: a proud look, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood, and heart that deviseth wicked imaginations, feet that be swift in running to mischief, a false witness that speaketh lies, and he that soweth discord among the brethren." Now, if you look at that passage, you think there's seven things there that the Lord hates. The proud look, one; lying tongue, two; hands that shed innocent blood, three; four, heart that devises wicked imaginations, five; feet that are swift and running to mischief, six; false witness that speaketh lies, seven; he that soweth discord among the brethren. Lies is mentioned twice in there. And someone that sows discord among the brethren, they're using their tongue to do that usually. That gives you three of the transgressions that God hates that have to do with the tongue. Three of the seven. These are things that we either do to others or have others do to us on a daily basis, yet the writer of Proverbs says and proclaims that the Lord hates these things. That's very strong language. If you notice, the second one mentioned is the lying tongue. It truly is sad that our society accepts lying as part of life. I constantly hear people telling someone about a predicament that they're in. I really don't know what to do. I don't know what to say. What am I supposed to do here? Well, just make up a lie. Just make something up. Just tell them this or tell them that. The Lord hates lying. So why is it so easy for us to lie? Why is it so easy for people to just lie, bold-faced lie, look someone in the eye and lie? It's a scary, scary thought. The lying tongue, Ephesians 4 and verse 25, Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 25. The writer here says, "Wherefore, putting away lying, speak every man truth with his neighbor, for we are all members one of another." Telling the truth is not a new concept. The Bible has been calling for honesty and truth since it was written. God has expected truth from His people. God expects us to tell the truth since before the Bible was written. Genesis chapter 4, verses 9 and 10. Genesis chapter 4, verses 9 and 10. "And the Lord said unto Cain, Where is Abel thy brother? And he said, I know not. Am I my brother's keeper? And he said, What hast thou done? The voice of thy brother's blood crieth unto me from the ground." Cain wasn't the first liar either. Remember when Satan lied to Eve in the garden? He told her, "You shall not surely die." God said, "If you eat of this tree, you shall surely die." And Satan said, "You shall not surely die." Genesis chapter 3 and verse 4. Satan is the father of lies. John 8 and verse 44. God doesn't want liars even in His sight. You think about that. The lie that Satan tells the most is that lying is not that bad. The lie that Satan constantly pushes and convinces people of is that it's okay to lie, when God doesn't want liars in His presence at all. Psalm 101, verse 7. Psalm 101, verse 7. It says here in Psalm 101, verse 7, "He that worketh deceit shall not dwell within my house. He that telleth lies shall not tarry in my sight." Lying is just like any other sin, in the sense that the more society accepts it, the more we tend to think that it's okay. Let's just knock all that rough edges off of it and make it a little bit smoother to swallow, so to speak. When we tell a lie, we sweep it under the rug as though we've done nothing wrong. Yet God sees lying as a serious infraction. Look at Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 5. Proverbs chapter 14 and verse 5. And it says here, a faithful witness will not lie, but a false witness will utter lies. As Christians, we are to be like Christ. Philippians chapter 2, verse 5, where it says, let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus. Proverbs 14, 5, we just read, says, a faithful witness will not lie. If we turn to Revelation chapter 1 and verse 5, it says that Jesus is that faithful witness. Philippians chapter 2, we are supposed to be like Jesus. Let this mind be in you, which was also in Christ Jesus. We are to be like the faithful witness and not lie. But is lying really that big of a deal? I mean, really? What about when someone asks, how are you doing? Oh, I'm fine. Really? You don't sound too fine. You don't sound too convincing. Well, you know how it is. What about when we lie to our spouse? Has anyone ever lied to their spouse before? I guess not here. Not anyone I know. Does this dress make me look fat? Not that one. You guys, you can be careful with questions like that. You get yourself in trouble. Very, very quickly. Very, very quickly. I don't think it's the dress. Oh, no. Yeah, we can be careful with our answers. We have to be careful with our answers. But we can actually answer someone honestly without lying. And we can answer somebody without a sharp answer, without a rude answer, without a disgraceful answer or a sarcastic answer and still tell the truth. We can do that. In that particular instance, something like, it's not your most flattering of dresses. That's good enough. That's acceptable. What about this one? I have read the terms and conditions of this agreement. uh, 452 pages in a number 4 font. No. Okay, I agree. Whatever. Just gave away my firstborn. We don't know. What is lying? Some people say that they can tell small lies because it is for the greater good. This is basically situation ethics. Well, the situation demands that I lie and I can tell whatever I want. There are actually some religious groups that encourage that. They say, well, if it's for the better, you can lie. I mean, lie if you have to just because it's for the better to tell that person. You ever see somebody that's in the they're at the end of their life? They're on their deathbed, perhaps? The doctor comes in and tells the family he's not going to make it. This is the end. And they go back in and the person says, what'd the doctor say? He says, you're going to be okay. We want to comfort those we love and we lie. That's still situation ethics. It's a difficult thing that we have to face sometimes. Sometimes we have to face the cold, hard truth and we have to tell the cold. So we must be careful in the things that we say and how that we say them in order that we can continue to tell the truth and not hurt somebody. It's hard enough to tell the truth sometimes. Why? As I mentioned earlier, why is lying so easy? Sometimes it's easier to tell the truth or to tell a lie than it is to tell the truth because of the consequences of the truth. Situations and ethics, although they may sound good on very lower levels like how does this pot roast taste? Tastes fantastic. Right? On lower levels, it seems okay to use that situation ethics, but if you ever take it to any extreme, you'll see that it is a flawed system. Some may say, well, nobody got hurt by my little lies, so I guess they're okay, no harm, no foul kind of deal, right? Though it may appear that no one was hurt by your lies, we really don't know the truth. Someone may have been hurt. You ever heard somebody, you hurt somebody's feelings, you didn't even know it until later on it comes out. I'm like, I had no idea. I did not realize. Well, we know this, that our lies are going to hurt our character. Have you ever met one of those people that they lie all the time and you don't trust anything they say? You can't trust anything because they constantly lie about anything and everything. And so you can't trust them. Their character is flawed because of their lies. What about those who never lie, that always tell the truth? They have such an impeccable character that, you know, if he said it, it's right. I don't care. If he said it, it's right. You think lying is no big deal? Look at Proverbs 19 and verse 9. Proverbs chapter 19 and verse 9. It says here in Proverbs 19 and verse 9, a false witness shall not be unpunished, and he that speaketh lies shall perish. What about lying to someone about their salvation? Someone believes 100% that they die today, they're going to heaven because someone told them one time that all you got to do is believe and you're going to go to heaven. And they've bought it hook, line, and sinker. And the Bible tells us that we got to obey the gospel. We must obey the gospel. And we lie to them and say, yeah, you're fine. We'll see you in heaven. Very, very difficult thing. I tell people when I preach a funeral, someone asks me to preach a funeral, and I'll tell them I will preach the funeral, but here's one thing I will not do. I will not preach anyone into heaven, and I will not preach anyone into hell. One way or the other, their fate is sealed. At the point, by the time someone comes and asks me to do the funeral, their destination is already secure. There's no changing it, no matter what I say. I will not lie to the family to make them feel better. I heard a guy one time preach a woman straight into heaven. Oh, he preached on and on and on about how she was going to heaven. She never obeyed the gospel. She was never faithful to God. And he preached her into heaven. And I asked him, I said, why did you do that? He said, because my mom was there and she needed to hear that. Sad, sad situation. Lying to someone about their salvation. Some people say things, well, lying is not as bad as all those other things that are wrong with our society. That's comparing sins. Well, if I can compare it to the worst things, then I'll make it okay. I can cover it up and smooth it over and make it look like it's not that big a deal. Look at Revelation chapter 21 and verse 8. Revelation chapter 21 and verse 8. If you think that lying is not as bad as any of the other sins or not as bad as the other sins, look at Revelation 21 and verse 8. But the fearful and unbelieving and abominable and murderers and whoremongers, and sorcerers, and idolaters, and all liars shall have their part in the lake which burneth with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. Liars are cast in with all of these others, the fearful and unbelieving, abominable, murderers, whoremongers, sorcerers. That's a group, that's a terrible group to be cast with. And all liars. So when I say the biggest lie that Satan has ever told, or the biggest lie that Satan has ever convinced us of, is that lying is okay. It's no big deal. Because according to God, it's a big deal. Lying is a big deal. We lie to our kids. We lie to our family. Tell them I'm not home. Phone rings. Can you get that? Tell them I'm not here. Tell them I'm not here. Yeah, he's not here. What can I do for you? Something I can help you with? He's not here. You're right there, standing there looking. We've done it. We've all done. I'll step out of the room. I will walk out of the room. He stepped out. It's true. Are we justifying lies sometimes? Remember the old phrase, liar, liar, pants on fire? What if that really happened? What if that really happened? The evening news would be a lot more interesting. Woof! Hey, check that out. Man, I would pay for that. I would pay to see that. When looking up scripture references on lying or the use of the tongue, you can't help but be directed to James, the third chapter. The third chapter of James, which is talking about a lying tongue, it's talking about the misuse of the tongue. It says in James chapter 3, beginning in verse 1, we're going to go through about the 12th verse, James chapter 3. My brethren, be not many masters, knowing that we shall receive the greater condemnation. For in many things we offend all. If any man offend not in word, the same is a perfect man and able to also bridle the whole body. Okay, so if you're able to control your tongue, then you're complete. You're complete. Have you ever had a checklist to do? I got about 4 more things left and I'll be complete. And you think about this. If you're still lying, if lying is one of those things that you have a habit of doing, or if you still have a problem controlling your tongue, you're incomplete. Incomplete. Because he says there that word perfect, it means complete. So the man that is able to control his tongue and not offend people in word, and that's going to happen. You're going to offend some people because some people's skin is so thin that you will hurt their feelings no matter what you say. You have to be careful. Sometimes those people, it's better not to talk to them. I'm sorry, but it's the truth. Sometimes I'm just better off not saying anything because everything I say is going to be taken the wrong way. People are going to be offended. People are going to be hurt. But the same that is not that is able to control his tongue, he shall be complete, able also to bridle the whole body. That means the person that can control his tongue has accomplished a major accomplishment and can control other things in his life as well. We're not necessarily talking about lying here in this particular instance, but just the control of the tongue. James tells us how someone who can control the tongue can control the whole body. Verse 3, "Behold, we put bits in the horses' mouths that they may obey us, and we turn about their whole body." Here he's comparing the size and power of a horse or any large animal, so to speak, to the small instrument which controls him. And the same is for us with the use of the tongue. Verse 4, "Behold, the ships, which though they be so great and are driven of fierce winds, yet are they turned about with a very small helm, whithersoever the governor listeth." The ship is turned by just a little tiny rudder. If you think about a ship the size of a cruise ship, a cruise ship is a floating city, so to speak. It's got everything you can imagine on it. And remember when coronavirus first hit, there were people on cruise ships that they decided, hey, we can't come aboard. We can't go on land. Why not? Because if we go on land, we're gonna expose ourselves to this virus. Where right now we have, I don't know how many people are on the ship, but all the people on the ship, none of them have it. The best thing for them to do is stay out in the ocean. So they did. They just stayed out there. And they just kept living out there because it's a city. You think about how big that ship is, and it's turned by a little bitty rudder. And I say little, it's not little like this, but compared to the rest of the ship, it's a small, small unit. And he uses this because these people know that. They understand that. They know how this works. A large vessel controlled by a small instrument. Verse 5, "Even so the tongue is a little member and boasteth great things. Behold how great a matter a little fire kindleth." You think about how somebody can say something and then it spreads like wildfire. I told two friends, and they told two friends, and they told two friends, and they told two friends, and so on and so on and so on and so on until it's out of control. I didn't mean to. Sometimes a little lie can spread, and next thing you know, it turns into something giant. Verse 6, "And the tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. So is the tongue among our members, that it defileth the whole body, and set on fire the course of nature, and is set on fire of hell. For every kind of beast, and of birds, and of serpents, and of things in the sea is tamed, and hath been tamed of mankind, but the tongue can no man tame. It is an unruly evil, full of deadly poison." You ever see the circus when they train those elephants to roll around on a ball or step up on a little stool or whatever they teach them to do? Every animal has been tamed. You look at it's not every animal, sure, but the Bible is throwing this out there and it's saying, we've been able to tame all of them. Oh, we didn't tame that one, yeah, but we tamed one a lot harder than that, so we know we can tame that one too. You ever been to SeaWorld? Watch Shamu? I went one time. One time, I think I've been one time, maybe twice. One time I went and we got there just in time. I wanted to see Shamu. It was like, wow, I've seen him on TV. I've seen all this. I got to go see Shamu. Well, Shamu got out of control that day. Shamu was supposed to swim up and supposed to splash some water up on the crowd and kind of freak them out a little bit and then go on. And he splashed them and they screamed and he thought, that's kind of cool. So he just kept on until the whole section was cleared out. Everybody was running, and he just kept on, and then he went on. You know, like, that's cool. We tamed a savage beast, but all in all, even though we had a little bit of an outbreak there, That animal is in the control of men. He can't just say, I quit. I'm out of here. They picked him up out of the ocean. They brought him in there and they tamed him. We can tame wild animals, and yet we can't control our tongue. I heard people say things like, you better just expect whatever comes out of my mouth to come out of my mouth, because that's just who I am. That's a serious lack of self-control. The Bible tells us it is honorable to be able to control our tongue. Next part of James chapter 3 is something we all need to read over and over until it becomes part of us, until it comes to our mind every time we contemplate saying something derogatory or saying something negative to a friend or a brother, sister, neighbor, anyone, even something, someone we come in contact with. Sometimes we want to say something. Sometimes people get under our skin. They say something weird to us or rude to us, and we want to lash back at them. We want to say something rude back to them. Why don't you tell them this? Why don't you tell them this? Why don't you tell them that? I'm the worst. I'm the worst about being sarcastic. I have a sarcastic answer. I get that from Charlie, hanging around with him. But no, I tell you, I think Diana says whenever Charlie starts getting kind of smart with her, she says, you've been hanging around with Jimmy, haven't you? So he probably gets it from me. And that's a sad thing. It's funny, but it's sad because I certainly, if that's one of my characteristic traits, I don't want to pass that on to someone else. I don't want someone else to start misusing the tongue because they've seen me do it or heard me do it. And sometimes we can be sarcastic and it's funny, and that's why we do that. But it shows also a lack of control of our tongue. We need to be able to edify one another. In talking about the tongue, James says of the tongue in verse 9, therewith bless we God, even the Father, and therewith curse we men which are made after the similitude of God. We bless the Father and we curse men out of the same mouth. We saw that in this morning's lesson. Verse 10, out of the same mouth proceeded blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not so to be. Out of the same mouth proceeding blessing and cursing. Verse 11, doth a fountain send forth at the same place sweet water and bitter? Can the fig tree, my brethren, bear olive berries, either a vine figs? So can no fountain both yield salt water and fresh. This particular passage goes a lot deeper than we give it credit for. Because we look at it and he says, can the mouth, out of the same mouth, proceed blessings and cursings? Hypothetically, no. It's a hypothetical question. No, it cannot. So can no fountain both yield salt water and fresh? It can't happen. So what's happening is, if you're blessing God and cursing man, then you got to take a side. One of them is hypocritical. Am I being a hypocrite by cursing man and while I'm trying to bless God? Or am I being a hypocrite by blessing God while I'm trying to curse man? You can't have it both ways. Whenever I hear someone who is a proclaimed Christian use filthy language, I can't help about think about verse 9. Therewith bless we God, even the Father, and therewith curse we men, which are made after the similitude of God. The tongue is an unruly evil indeed. But God tells us that we can control it. We can have it under control. James chapter 4, we'll go into that a little bit. You know, the Bible tells us that we aren't even supposed to spread rumors. Lying is one thing, but we spread rumors. Have you heard? Did you know what she did? Or what about this? I know I probably shouldn't be saying this, but you ever heard those kinds? Somebody enter a sentence with a disclaimer? Let me tell you something. Has anybody heard? Have you heard about this? I know that I don't mean to gossip, but yes, you do. You're loving every minute of it. You're eating this up. Leviticus chapter 19 and verse 16. It's the Old Testament. It's the Old Testament law, but it's still the principle of God. Leviticus chapter 19, verse 16, thou shalt not go up and down as a talebearer among thy people, neither shalt thou stand against the blood of thy neighbor. I am the Lord. What is a talebearer?
When we hear the word talebearer, we automatically think of someone who is spreading lies, going out and telling tall tales or spreading lies. But a talebearer can also be someone who is just causing trouble by saying the wrong thing to people who will use it to cause chaos. Or to cause chaos when saying the things that will cause chaos without using a middleman, so to speak. Proverbs 11:13 talks about a talebearer. Proverbs 11:13, a talebearer revealeth secrets, but he that is of a faithful spirit concealeth the matter. What's wrong with revealing secrets, and why would one want to conceal a matter? Sometimes it's just best to keep our mouths shut. Sometimes it's just best because I can tell the truth. Someone says, why did you say that? That really hurt my feelings. The Bible says I'm supposed to tell the truth. I just told the truth. Truth hurts. Too bad for you, right? Sometimes we have to make the decision that I'm just not going to say anything about this. I'm better off just to not say anything at all. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to tell this person. If I get confronted and they ask me about this, I have to tell the truth. However, sometimes it's better to keep our mouths shut. We don't want to start trouble. We don't want to cause problems. Proverbs 18 and verse 8 says, the words of a talebearer are as wounds. They go down into the innermost parts of the belly. Someone who is going about telling tales, spreading gossip, spreading rumors, may not feel they're doing anything wrong, yet they are causing strife and division by doing such. I had a friend one time, and we were close friends, and we got to talking one time, and I introduced him to another old friend of mine who I'd known for a long, long time. And then over the next course of about 3 months, I found that my friendship with the first guy started to fall apart. And our friendship just started to get, we were always at each other's throats. It seemed like every time I talked to him, he was being rude and talked down to me. What I found out was that the other guy was trying to he'd tell me one thing and he'd tell him something else. And he was deliberately just going, playing us back and forth, back and forth. You know, he said this about you. He said that about me. And next thing you know, he has us at each other's throats. A talebearer, stirring up strife. He was a person that was stirring up strife. Remember the old saying, if you can't say anything nice, don't say anything at all? You ever meet one of those people that are just real, real quiet? Something to think about. Man, he sure is quiet. Yeah, see, he ain't got nothing nice to say about you. Maybe that's he took that to heart. If you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. That's good advice. Sometimes we can just look at things and say, I just don't want to say anything. Sometimes it's better to keep our mouths shut and just listen. Proverbs chapter 26 and verse 20. Proverbs chapter 26 and verse 20. Where no wood is, there the fire goeth out. So where there is no talebearer, strife ceaseth. It's like fuel to the fire. Being a talebearer is like adding fuel to a fire. In other words, when you're going about telling tales, then you're fueling the fire. Sometimes it's better to just say nothing at all than to say what you want to say, even if it's the truth or if it's right. You ever had someone quit talking when you walk into the room? Somebody talking and laughing about something, you walk in and how does that make you feel? What are y'all talking about? Nothing. I've got some honest friends. We're talking about you. Thanks. What are y'all saying? You don't want to know. Thank you, I don't. Our words don't have to be destructive. In fact, there's a lot of good that can come from the effectual encouragement of someone's words. You ever have somebody say something to you that is so polite and so nice and so encouraging that it just moves you? Or you ever heard someone say something else to someone and pay them a compliment, and it's like, wow, that is profound right there. Our words are powerful. We can tear someone down or we can build someone up just with our words, and we choose to do so. We choose. We make the choice right away. I decide I'm gonna tear this person down. Watch, I'm gonna watch what I say to him. Get everybody rallied up. Usually when we say something good, we don't do that. We don't say, hey, come here, watch this. I'm going to go pay Charlie a compliment. Watch this. At least people I know don't do that, because the sincerity that's there. Proverbs chapter 15, verses 1 and 2. Proverbs chapter 15, verses 1 and 2. This is one that married couples need to learn, very much so. A soft answer turneth away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. You ever lash out at your spouse? I'm the worst. I know what I want. I know what I'm thinking. Why can't you tell what I'm thinking? We can't read each other's minds. So sometimes we lash out and say something, or we say something in a tone. When my kids were little, my wife was saying, you need to listen to the tone that you take with them. You need to listen to the tone, the way you're talking to them. I wasn't saying anything bad. I wasn't saying anything wrong. I wasn't lying. I was just the tone, the way we talk. A soft answer turneth away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. I don't think I know a single person who says, you know, when my kids were young, I was so nice to them. I should have been meaner to them. I was so polite to them. I should have insulted them more. But I hear the opposite all the time. I wish I'd have spent more time with them. I wish I wouldn't have been so hard on them. I wish I wouldn't have been so tough. I'm glad my parents were tough on me. They could have been even tougher on me, but think about that verse right there. A soft answer turneth away wrath. Let's think about what we have to say before we say it. Next time someone lashes out at you, think about how you answer them, regardless of whether they're lashing out at you or not. Aside from giving a sharp answer or a hard answer, sharp answer to those that are just speaking to us normally, you think about those who attack us and how sharp we answer them. Verse 2, these verses are written as comparatives. Chapter 15 of Proverbs, verse 2. The tongue of the wise useth knowledge aright, but the mouth of fools poureth out foolishness. Here we see it is possible to have knowledge, yet lack the wisdom to use that knowledge. Verse 4 says, a wholesome tongue is a tree of life, but perverseness therein is a breach of the spirit. The psalmist prays for the proper use of the tongue, and we would be wise to follow those same lines of reasoning. Psalm 19 and verse 14. Psalm 19 and verse 14. And it says here in Psalm 19 verse 14, let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer. Lord, let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable. I very much think we should all pray that the words of our mouth may be acceptable unto God, that we will only say those things that are truth and only say those things that are edifying and encouraging to others. I pray constantly that when I step into the pulpit that I won't say anything that is contrary to God's word. It seems easy to do, but it's harder than it sounds. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 29. Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 29. Let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth, but that which is good to the use of edifying, that may minister grace unto the hearers. When I say it sounds easy to do, but it's harder than it sounds, I'm not talking about telling the truth of the gospel, and I'm not talking about speaking where the Bible speaks and remaining silent where the Bible is silent. But I'm talking about is not being as tactful as you should be, or not choosing your words wisely, blurting out, spitting out, saying something before you catch it. You ever try to catch those words as they go out of your mouth? It's as easy as putting toothpaste back in the tube. You can't get it back in there. There's no way to get those back once they're said. God tells us about using our tongue so that we'll think before we say things, before we hurt somebody's feelings, because those feelings, once they're hurt, it's very, very difficult to fix that. Very difficult. Romans chapter 12 and verse 9 goes along with this passage we just read, Ephesians 4:29. Let love be without dissimulation. Abhor that which is evil. Cleave to that which is good. Next time you want to say something, think about it for a second or two. Is what I want to say going to be edifying? We use our tongues in such a way that we can build one another up. We laugh at little kids because of their simple arguments. They push each other around. They argue with each other. They're they're best friends 1 minute, the next minute they're at each other's throats, and a minute later they're made up and they're back friends again. Thought y'all hated each other, screaming at each other. Next thing you know, they're friends and they're playing. It seems funny, doesn't it? We laugh at that. However, as adults, we do the exact same thing. Sometimes we get angry over something really simple that someone said, something very insignificant that someone said. The difference is the kids usually make up and become friends again, and adults oftentimes will just never talk to that person again. Cut them off, cut them out. Never, I don't ever talk to them again. Why? What did he do to you? Oh, he insulted me, or he said something bad, or he said this, or he said that. Words. You got to be careful. We stay angry at people all the time because of things that they do. We don't ever forget. Therefore, we don't make up like little kids. Fortunately, as Christians, we have the Bible to remind us to be careful with what we say. Be careful how we say things, not to offend. Colossians chapter 4 and verse 6. Colossians chapter 4 and verse 6 says, "Let your speech be always with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer every man." Know how you ought to answer. We all know that salt is a preservative, so then our speech should be of such that it preserves righteousness and condemns only sin. Be careful what you say. When your children are small, you're real careful with what you say, right? Oh, we can't say that. I've been accused of saying bad words from the pulpit. He said a bad word. Or, "Mr. Jim, you said a bad word up there." "Really, what did I say?" "You said, shut up. That's a bad word." "Uh-huh, you just said it too, so you're just as guilty as me." Them little kids try to get me. But you think about this. We use those things, and we've done that with our kids. "Hey, we don't say that. That's ugly." We try to teach them, "Don't say that. That's ugly." When they're real little, oh yeah, when they're a 2-year-old, a 3-year-old, and we tell them, "Don't say a word like I just said. Don't say that." When they're 10, and they're telling each other that, "Hey guys, don't be so, it's okay." And then when they're 12, whatever. Then it gets worse and worse and worse. Over time, it gets to where they'll say more and more and more. And in essence, we are acclimating our children to become liars or to become hateful users of the tongue. That's a scary thought. We're acclimating our children to sinful behavior a little bit at a time. It's okay for you to say this after you're 5, but you can't say that when you're 3. Or it's okay to say this when you're a 12-year-old or a teenager, but you can't say it when you're a little kid. And we let them do. Have you ever heard somebody use profanity or see a little kid or smaller kid using profanity around their parents? The things I wouldn't say as a teenager around my parents, I see kids that are in 3rd or 4th grade talking like that. What is up with that? Why are they talking like that? The parents' attitude is, well, they're going to do it anyway. They might as well not go around trying to hide it from me. Mom and I talk like that. They might as well talk like that too. Chip off the old block. Listen to him. And we degrade society over and over again. One of the hardest things to overcome is the use of the tongue. Believe it or not, there are people that can quit smoking and walk away from it cold turkey, but can't quit using profanity because it's become so ingrained in their vocabulary that they can't release it. Or telling lies. Chronic liar, you think that they just said, "You know, I'm going to stop doing that. That's not nice." It's hard. It's very difficult for them to stop. They can't stop because it's already ingrained in them. And again, we start teaching our children at a very young age. "Hey, tell them I'm not home. Go tell that lady I'm not." Whatever. We make up things. Have you ever considered that our tongue may be what is holding us back spiritually? You ever pray for spiritual growth? Perhaps it is that our tongue would hold us back. What words do you suppose we are saying that would be keeping us from reaching the level of spiritual maturity that we should reach, or that we attain to? Are we holding ourselves back from spiritual blessings because of our lack of control of our tongue? You ever have, I know parents, they know what their kids are capable of. Give them a little more responsibility. Give them a little bit more. Keep encouraging them. And there's some that are like, "Don't give him no more. That's all he can handle." We already know that. Back off. That's all he can handle. It's too much. Ever think maybe God will be holding back spiritual blessings because we can't handle them until we learn to control the tongue? We can't even control our speech. One doesn't have to cuss like a sailor to have an out-of-control tongue either. Sometimes we say things that we don't mean and we later regret it. Sometimes we say things that are dangerous to us, to our relationship with others, dangerous to us, to our relationship with God. Some people lie to protect them from the consequences of the truth. Some people lie even when telling the truth has no unsavory consequences. They just do it out of habit. It becomes so ingrained. They just feel compelled to stretch the truth every time their mouths open up. Is that the truth? Is that the truth? Well, maybe. Maybe not. Close enough. Most of it. When Satan told Eve the first lie, he mingled it with truth. He mingled it with truth so it was more believable. God actually said, "Ye shall surely die." Satan just added one word, "You shall not surely die." Don't you think the world would be a better place if we were all to just use our tongue for edifying? If everybody you talk, you ever see those people that you know that no matter what, when you see them coming, they're going to have something good to say, they're going to have something positive to say, or they're going to have a positive attitude, and you're like, "Hey, how are you?" You're excited to see them, you're happy to see them. What about that person that every time you see them, they have nothing but negative to say? "Oh, I don't want to talk to this person. I want to run." Let's not be that person. Let's be the positive person. Imagine what kind of world we would live in if it was impossible for anybody to tell a lie. Or maybe if their pants caught on fire when they did. I still like that one better. But we have a habit of lying, and the biggest problem with it is that we sweep it under the rug. If it's a little lie, we act like it's okay. Remember our passage that we read earlier that said all liars. It didn't say big liars. It didn't say those of the big fat liar, those that tell the big lies or anything like that. It said all liars, Revelation chapter 21 and verse 8. All liars shall have their part in the lake which burneth with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. If you have any need this evening, if you have not obeyed the gospel of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, or if you just need the prayers of the congregation, or if you need to rededicate your life to God, won't you come while together we stand and sing the song that's been selected?